Part 2. The Cosmogonic Cycle. Chapter 1. Emanations. 1. From Psychology to Metaphysics. It is not difficult for the modern intellectual to concede that the symbolism of mythology has a psychological significance. Particularly after the work of the psychoanalysts, there can be little doubt either that myths are of the nature of dream, or that dreams are symptomatic of the dynamics of the psyche. Sigmund Freud, Carl G. Jung, Wilhelm Stekel, Otto Ronk, Carl Abraham, Geza Roheim, and many others have, within the past few decades, developed a vastly documented modern lore of dream and myth interpretation. And though the doctors differ among themselves, they are united into one great modern movement by a considerable body of common principles. With their discovery that the patterns and logic of fairy tale and myth correspond to those of dream, the long discredited chimeras of archaic man have returned dramatically to the foreground of modern consciousness. According to this view, it appears that through the wonder tales, which pretend to describe the lives of the legendary heroes, the powers of the divinities of nature, the spirits of the dead, and the totem ancestors of the group, symbolic expression is given to the unconscious desires, fears, and tensions that underlie the conscious patterns of human behavior. Mythology, in other words, is psychology misread as biography, history, and cosmology. The modern psychologist can translate it back to its proper denotations and thus rescue for the contemporary world a rich and eloquent document of the profoundest depths of human character. Exhibited here as in a fluoroscope, Stand reveals the hidden processes of the enigma Homo sapiens, Occidental and Oriental, primitive and civilized, contemporary and archaic. The entire spectacle is before us. We have only to read it, study its constant patterns, analyze its variations, and therewith come to an understanding of the deep forces that have shaped man's destiny and must continue to determine both our private and our public lives. But if we are to grasp the full value of the materials, we must note that myths are not exactly comparable to dream. Their figures originate from the same sources, the unconscious wells of fantasy, and their grammar is the same, but they are not the spontaneous products of sleep. On the contrary, their patterns are consciously controlled, and their understood function is to serve as a powerful picture language for the communication of traditional wisdom. This is true already of the so-called primitive folk mythologies. The trance-susceptible shaman and the initiated antelope priest are not unsophisticated in the wisdom of the world, nor unskilled in the principles of communication by analogy. The metaphors by which they live and through which they operate have been brooded upon, searched, and discussed for centuries, even millennia. They have served whole societies, furthermore, as the mainstays of thought and life. The culture patterns have been shaped to them. The youth have been educated, and the aged rendered wise through the study, experience, and understanding of their effective initiatory forms. For they actually touch and bring into play the vital energies of the whole human psyche. They link the unconscious to the fields of practical action, not irrationally, in the manner of a neurotic projection, but in such fashion as to permit a mature and sobering, practical comprehension of the fact world to play back, as a stern control into the realms of infantile wish and fear. And if this be true of the comparatively simple folk mythologies, the systems of myth and ritual by which the primitive hunting and fishing tribes support themselves, what may we say of such magnificent cosmic metaphors as those reflected in the great Homeric epics, the Divine Comedy of Dante, the Book of Genesis, and the timeless temples of the Orient? Until the most recent decades, these were the support of all human life and the inspiration of philosophy, poetry, and the arts. Where the inherited symbols have been touched by a Lao Tzu, Buddha, Zoroaster, Christ, or Muhammad, employed by a consummate master of the spirit as a vehicle of the profoundest moral and metaphysical instruction. Obviously, we are in the presence rather of immense consciousness than of darkness. And so, to grasp the full value of the mythological figures that have come down to us, we must understand that they are not only symptoms of the unconscious, as indeed are all human thoughts and acts, but also controlled and intended statements of certain spiritual principles, which have remained as constant throughout the course of human history as the form and nervous structure of the human physique itself. Briefly formulated, the universal doctrine teaches that all the visible structures of the world, all things and beings, are the effects of a ubiquitous power out of which they rise, which supports and fills them during the period of their manifestation, and back into which they must ultimately dissolve. This is the power known to science as energy, to the Melanesians as mana, to the Sioux Indians as Wakanda, the Hindus as Shakti, and the Christians as the power of God. Its manifestation in the psyche is termed by the psychoanalysts, libido, and its manifestation in the cosmos is the structure and flux of the universe itself. The apprehension of the source of this undifferentiated yet everywhere particularized substratum of being is rendered frustrate by the very organs through which the apprehension must be accomplished. The forms of sensibility and the categories of human thought, which are themselves manifestations of this power, so confine the mind that it is normally impossible not only to see, but even to conceive beyond the colorful, fluid, infinitely various and bewildering phenomenal spectacle. The function of ritual and myth is to make possible and then to facilitate the jump. By analogy, forms and conceptions that the mind and its senses can comprehend are presented and arranged in such a way as to suggest a truth or openness beyond. And then, the conditions for meditation having been provided, the individual is left alone. Myth is but the penultimate. The ultimate is openness, that void or being beyond the categories, into which the mind must plunge alone and be dissolved. Beyond the categories, and therefore not defined by either of the pair of opposites called void and being. Such terms are only clues to the transcendency. Therefore, God and the gods are only convenient means, themselves of the nature of the world of names and forms, though eloquent of, and ultimately conducive to, the ineffable. They are mere symbols to move and awaken the mind, and to call it past themselves.
The recognition of the secondary nature of the personality of whatever deity is worshipped is characteristic of most of the traditions of the world. In Christianity, Mohammedanism, and Judaism, however, the personality of the divinity is taught to be final, which makes it comparatively difficult for the members of these communions to understand how one may go beyond the limitations of their own anthropomorphic divinity. The result has been, on the one hand, a general obfuscation of the symbols, and on the other, a god-ridden bigotry such as is unmatched elsewhere in the history of religion. For a discussion of the possible origin of this aberration, see Sigmund Freud's Moses and Monotheism.
Heaven, hell, the mythological age, Olympus, and all the other habitations of the gods are interpreted by psychoanalysis as symbols of the unconscious. The key to the modern systems of psychological interpretation, therefore, is this: the metaphysical realm equals the unconscious. Correspondingly, the key to open the door the other way is the same equation in reverse. The unconscious equals the metaphysical realm. For, as Jesus states it, "Behold, the kingdom of God is within you." Indeed, the lapse of superconsciousness into the state of unconsciousness is precisely the meaning of the biblical image of the fall. The constriction of consciousness, to which we owe the fact that we see not the source of the universal power, but only the phenomenal forms reflected from that power, turns superconsciousness into unconsciousness and, at the same instant and by the same token, creates the world. Redemption consists in the return to superconsciousness and therewith the dissolution of the world. This is the great theme and formula of the cosmogonic cycle, the mythical image of the world's coming to manifestation and subsequent return into the non-manifest condition. Equally, the birth, life, and death of the individual may be regarded as a descent into unconsciousness and return. The hero is the one who, while still alive, knows and represents the claims of the superconsciousness, which throughout creation is more or less unconscious. The adventure of the hero represents the moment in his life when he achieved illumination, the nuclear moment when, while still alive, he found and opened the road to the light beyond the dark walls of our living death. And so it is that the cosmic symbols are presented in a spirit of thought-bewildering, sublime paradox. The kingdom of God is within, yet without also. God, however, is but a convenient means to wake the sleeping princess, the soul. Life is her sleep, death the awakening. The hero, the waker of his own soul, is himself but the convenient means of his own dissolution. God, the waker of the soul, is therewith his own immediate death. Perhaps the most eloquent possible symbol of this mystery is that of the God crucified, the God offered, himself to himself. Read in one direction, the meaning is the passage of the phenomenal hero into superconsciousness, the body with its five senses, like that of Prince Five Weapons stuck to sticky hair, is left hanging to the cross of the knowledge of life and death, pinned in five places, the two hands, the two feet, and the head crowned with thorns. But also, God has descended voluntarily and taken upon himself this phenomenal agony. God assumes the life of man, and man releases the God within himself at the midpoint of the cross arms of the same coincidence of opposites, the same sun door through which God descends and man ascends, each as the other's food. The modern student may, of course, study these symbols as he will, either as a symptom of others' ignorance or as a sign to him of his own, either in terms of a reduction of metaphysics to psychology or vice versa. The traditional way was to meditate on the symbols in both senses. In any case, they are telling metaphors of the destiny of man, man's hope, man's faith, and man's dark mystery.